Welcome to Hidden Battles, Destigmatizing Mental Illness, a weekly podcast where passionate advocates of mental health converge to illuminate unseen struggles faced by millions. Join Jeremy, Terrell, and Lorraine as they delve into candid conversations about stigmas, cultural risk, values, intersectionality, and mental health. Hear from mental health professionals and those diagnosed with a mental illness. Together, they put on the table the things people think about but are afraid to talk about. Get ready to embark on an insightful journey.
Listen weekly on Spotify, YouTube, Apple Podcast, and subscribe, like, and please share with family and friends that can benefit. See you on the journey.
Welcome to the first podcast of the year.
Yep.
This year, we wanted to really focus on inviting community guests in and people that give back to the community. Today, we have Tiffany Childress with Linked to Literacy. How are you doing?
Doing great. Thank you.
Awesome. Welcome.
Yeah, welcome. So let's just start off by telling us about Link to Literacy, what you do there, programs, what the function is.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for having me, everyone. Pleased to be here. Honored to be here. As a part of Link to Literacy, our mission is to provide or inspire generational change by providing inclusive books, literacy-based programs throughout the community, and intentional partnerships. We have been around since September of 2022, and we are tiny but mighty, but really, really like to, you know, make an impact and connect with different places, not only just, you know, corporate sponsorships, but different nonprofits, and seeing how we can enhance some of their literacy programs.
Awesome. Perfect. So I think we just kind of hop right into it.
Okay.
I did print off a... And I think sometimes the listeners will be like, "What are we? Where's Jeremy going with this?" Well, so I wanted to state, you know, Trump had put Medicaid on the chopping block. You're like, "What does that have to do with literacy?" And I think that what we would like our listeners and our viewers to really understand is that all public policy and all public issues proportionally and disproportionately affect people. And you know, I know we're not getting into actual policy, but it would make sense that they would keep children's health care, they would keep, you know, pregnant mother's health care. But I guess I'll just open up to the group. What would taking health care, 20 million Americans, as part of what the chopping block would be for people that don't have a disabled, who aren't pregnant and who don't have children, but what about the people who have children and don't have health care? How would that affect potentially their literacy? You know, poverty, we know, does. I pulled up some statistics. Terrell did as well. Any thoughts on that initially, or
it's just further disabling us?
Yeah.
You know, those that, I mean, for one, you have to be literate to read the policy, right?
True.
So if you can't even understand the dynamics of what that even entails, strike one, right?
Absolutely.
You take it away, that's add a layer of stress. So then when it comes down to working 2 and 3 jobs, right, and then your child gets sick, then what do you do?
Right?
You're questioning, but you don't want them to question, you know, their self-worth and their self-care just because you can't afford it. And
right.
So it's just further disabling the ability to move forward.
Yeah. You have any thoughts on that, Lorraine or Terrell? Or?
I concur with that. I mean, that's true because it breaks down the confidence, the barriers within the underserved population. The other thing I'm concerned about is just the shutting down of education, Department of Education.
Mm,
that's the big deal. I mean,
well,
what do we do?
Add to that, you have Biden, who did just initiate legislation to remove health insurance related costs off your credit report. So they're not allowed to. So you see how on one end we have warring policies every 4-8 years going back and forth between right and the left and so on and so forth. And like you just said, it further disables people because the people which that's what my mission in life is, to help people most disenfranchised. That's why I have a facility that works with severe mental illness, you know? And so, you know, how do we get people who don't buy into this idea of what free healthcare would do for all, like Medicaid for all or Medicare for all? What that would do is just unlimited in terms of people getting the treatment that they need, right?
Exactly. And it what's so apathetic about this whole thing called the system, government, is you've got those who the 1 or 2% who really don't give a shit about folks at the bottom. And so they wonder why crime rates go up. They wonder why the literacy rate is as bad as it is, simply because of what you just showed here, Jeremy,
yeah,
about chopping Medicaid. Because when you chop Medicaid, then people aren't able to take care of their bodies.
Right.
They are frustrated. They use alternative means of medicating themselves with alcohol, drugs, violence, because someone in the household is suffering and they're frustrated. And so all of this, what you just showed, impacts literacy, literally.
And, it does.
And one of the conversations that Lorraine and I had prior to this meeting, or to our first podcast of the year, is that Americans have been, call it what you want, brainwashed into believing into focusing on problems, not cause. So it's always, let's treat the problem. Well, we have children who can't read, so let's teach them how to read. Why can't they read? Mm-hmm. And that's where Americans go, regardless of your spectrum of beliefs.
That's why they cut Head Start.
Yeah.
Cut Head Start so we don't give them a jump start.
Right.
Yes.
Okay?
Right. Yes.
And so the system is designed to keep people down. This is just another example of trying to make it harder for those who are disenfranchised.
Mm-hmm. Dismantling core human rights.
Absolutely.
That's it.
And it's just amazing to me that healthcare isn't one, because, I mean, imagine trying to work yourself out of poverty or working yourself out of these areas of intersectionality, and then a health problem happens and then you have to end up paying for it. That just further disenfranchises. From a psychological perspective, your focus when you're in poverty or you're hurting or you don't have the advantages that some other people do, it's right in front of your face. You're just focusing on survival. Right. And it's a luxury to think about policy. It's a luxury to sit down and read for some people, because I think I read in there like only 1 in 300 children in poverty have access to a book across the nation.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
But if you look at the other statistic, there's an average of 110 books in an American household. Well, which households are those in?
Right.
So you know,
good question.
Let's get back into what you do. So, you know, how, in your experience, how do issues like poverty, racial inequities, or lack of access to resources intersect with literacy outcomes in the community you serve? So ideally, this would help reveal some systemic challenges that affect literacy. So I think it's fairly obvious by your introduction what you do, but what can we do to get into that cause and name? I don't know that you could be wrong, because you could pretty much name anything, but do you have any thoughts on what you're doing? A lot of top layer emergency care. What can we do as a system to get in there?
Well, for one, what you just described is my why I wanted to be a part of Linked to Literacy. It's really what Linked to Literacy does that most nonprofits don't want to address is the actual problem. And what I love, when I say we're tiny but mighty, if we say we're going to do something, we do it.
Boom.
And that's a differentiator. I'm on other boards. I serve in that capacity. I love our community, but we're on the front lines. And so what it is providing the education, like having the statistics to say, like, this is a real problem. This is a real issue, even in Lincoln. Because, you know, people think of Lincoln as there's not a lot of poverty. You don't see a lot of violence. And it's because you probably don't want to open your eyes to it or want to be subjected to it. Right. But it exists.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So actually stating that there's a problem and then having the different programs that are accessible to everybody. We're intentional about that.
Right.
So it's not any kind of book that we provide has nothing to do with, well, I see you, Lorraine, and you're wearing black, so maybe you like black books. No, it's actually working with the directors and the facilities who know these kids, who know their issues, who know their challenges, and then finding a way to provide a book that, you know, actually interests them, gives them a chance to have that social and emotional connection. So we're really intentional about that.
Awesome. Which actually takes me to my next question, if you guys want to chime in. But you had already mentioned inclusive books. Why why should a white person of privilege be interested in a little black girl growing up or a girl?
Yes. Oh, right. Good question.
Why can't she just read a white book?
I love it because you need to have a scope that's outside of your own. Otherwise, you have no real pulse on the world. at all. Mm-hmm. And when, what I love about inclusivity, though, it's not just racially related. It's people with disabilities. It's mm-hmm. English as a learned language. It's, you know, it's LGBTQ. It's female leads. It is everybody. Mm-hmm. So you become well-versed. You have just a small, you know, smidgen of either interest or just comfortability saying like, hey, wow, nice to meet you.
Right.
Like, tell me about
exactly.
you.
Exactly.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's
so
really awesome.
How important is it for, and I'm speaking of African Americans, mm-hmm. to see themselves in books?
Oh, it's so empowering because I didn't see myself in a book growing mm-hmm. up. I just happened, English has been just my favorite subject, right? So that's, it wasn't hard for me to pick up a book. But damn empowering it would have been to see myself in a book. Oh. And so, you know, when I became a parent, they have to be able to see themselves. And I mean, right. it's real because I was born in 1982, mm-hmm. right? My parents were very much into education. So I had a leg up there. You know, they provided us the tools in which yes. we had accessibility to books. You know, driving to school today, my daughter's like, Mom, I'm the only brown person in my class. And I said, yeah, she's six, okay? I didn't point that out. We were just driving, jamming out on the way to school. She goes, was that your experience too? And I said, mm-hmm. She goes, did you ever feel lonely?
Wow.
You know, and so last night we read, you know, Change Things. You know, we yeah. do the things, yes. but like it's empowering. And so that's why, again, my why, to have two people that don't look like me with the intention of like inclusivity matters.
Sure.
Yes.
Yes. I mean.
That's powerful.
Let me yeah. add to that because I want to dig just a little bit deeper on why it's super important. Because when people that are not of the power group, this is in any country, including the United States, everything is written by, produced mm-hmm. by, and narrated by the dominant voice. And so you start to indoctrinate people of different cultures, which step outside of what their cultural norms are. And it's all over the map. You look anywhere on the map where other cultures have invaded other cultures and then try to acculturate them into their own. It right. never works. And so one of the reasons for poverty is the inability for people to acculturate into a system that also is a double bind. You want to indoctrinate me into this world of yours, but I can't come in because you won't give me the loans. You won't give me the books. You won't give me the effort that it takes to bring up my resources so I'm matched. So what that can do to somebody's mind is you can be anything you want. Really?
Right.
I mean, really? Can I be anything I want? You know, and those opportunities aren't open to everybody. And that is just a simple fact. Mm-hmm. And one more real quick point. We had talked about how, like, there's not systemic racism in America because of the way that laws are written. They're no longer, you know, disenfranchising, or they're no longer racist, or all those things kind of things. But there's still human beings in control of those laws, pulling people over, teaching, banking, I mean, on and on and on. So you might have removed language from the writings, but you haven't right. removed the behavior from the people in control.
Exactly. Or the power.
Or the power. Yes, that's the number one word. How are we doing on time, mister?
We're at
14
minutes.
Okay. Oh, all right. We're doing good.
So what we're talking about is, and this is really pisses me off, we're talking about economic literacy, mm-hmm. cultural literacy, which when you think about it, you peel the onion back on that, it's racism.
Yeah.
It's discrimination. Because when you do not, when you don't have information or don't want to share the information, want the information out there, then people on the other side of the tracks can't appreciate what's happening on the other side. And they want to keep a blind eye to it, okay?
Right.
So if there was no civil rights movement, you see what I'm saying? The literacy about people having rights, women's rights, men's rights, women's rights, African-American rights, all different cultures' rights. So when you have information, you become more literate. And so really, this whole thing with Trump, okay, this is an example of the system trying to keep people down.
It's trickery because it's trickery. The fact of the matter is if you actually provided every child and every family with whole healthy foods, that Medicaid number, without dropping Medicaid for those people, for the emergencies and the regular doctor's appointments, would go down. But you've got diabetes disproportionate depending on race and poverty status.
So who benefits from that?
If I remember correctly, like, African Americans died disproportionately to their white counterparts during COVID. Was that is that correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So but why is that? You know,
and no access to foods, the cost of the foods, exactly. They're healthy foods. I mean, that's medication. It's intentional. Junk right. food right. is cheap.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's true.
And to really quickly wrap all that up into one big giant bundle of what we actually do here, we're destigmatizing mental illness in the way that you destigmatize. So, and this is a complicated, you know, cultural counseling, cultural therapy that I learned is that you don't approach another person of an opposite race and say, teach me about this, because that's technically considered a microaggression. No. I should be engulfing myself in activities of others, music, food, there's community centers, there's all kinds of different things, volunteering your time and observing and, you know,
organically.
Knowing through. Yeah, organically, right, correct. Right. Well,
organically.
Ooh, right. Can I interject?
Of course.
But the reason why you get the choice.
Right.
If we want to thrive in this world, it's adaptability. Like we have sure. to be able to... We have to be able to
speak the king's language.
Yes, yeah. and
look a certain way, yep. sound yeah. a certain way.
Yeah. Well, and be comfortable. Right. Learn yeah. to be comfortable yes. in our uncomfortability.
Yeah.
Yes. In order to, you know, show that we have good work ethic, we have follow through, we have good ideas. But you have to be able to trust me before you even think about anything that comes out of my mouth.
Sure.
That takes us to cultural risk. Well, that's one of our values.
That's one of the things is taking those cultural risks because. Mm-hmm. You know, because destigmatizing mental illness, one of the things you could argue that there's lots of different reasons why mental health occurs in mental health issues occur in people, biomarker, different gene dispositions and, you know, all these kinds of things. But when you wrap it up, something triggers it. And when you really get down to it, it's like the system gets on overload and it can't take it anymore. And you get anxiety, depression. You can get severe mental illness. There's substance use and there's all kinds of things that go down there. And then what does that do for reading and literacy? You know what I mean? And
you can't focus.
Right. Yeah. So that, I mean, that's why mm-hmm. people might be saying, well, why Hidden Battles destigmatizing mental illness? Why do we have somebody from Link to Literacy? Because everything ties together. Yes. It all does. And yes. that's why you have to have a multi-systemic approach. You have to have, I would argue you have to have anything that's ever been really done in this country has been done from the ground up. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at any of the civil rights movement, a lot of it. So, I guess we're part of that voice, but the cultural risks are getting people, like we had neighbors around here that said our clients were stealing from them, that were physically whatever and threatening and all these kinds of things. And I literally, I know well enough to know that those are the same things that were said about other races, not in my neighborhood. That person looks like a threat. That person, mm-hmm. And I think, I don't want to ask the why question yet, but I mean, let's be thinking about why should people who are privileged, what would benefit them? Why should they? And I have some answers to that, but I wanted to know about how to improve literacy at the community level and how do we break down social barriers? And then anything you want to say on any barriers that you've seen your agency from in terms of anything that we've talked about or just something regarding funding, participation, volunteers, anything like that?
Well, one program that we have or that we're partnered with is Dolly Parton Imagination Library. Mm. And that is the best way, the biggest leg up for anybody. It doesn't matter your socioeconomic status at all. Mm-hmm. If you sign up, we've opened all of Lancaster County and Thurston County. So anyone age 0 to 5, their parents sign them up, get a free book every month. So you're already building that home library, which, again, that takes off the stress off the parents, right? And it's just something for the kids to look forward to. It's that ownership piece. It's a brand new book. And what we love about Dolly Parton Imagination Library is that they actually have a lot of emphasis on inclusivity, too. So it's mission alignment there. Yeah. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. Yeah. So that's one program that definitely gives you the leg up. And then also, again, we're partnering with teammates. We talked about this before, and that's grades 3 through 5. Fourth grade across the nation is where you really see the dip in scores across the board.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because kids can't read. Yeah. And COVID is definitely a reason for that because, again, the resources, if your parents are trying to make it or your caretaker is trying to make it, they don't have the capacity. It's not that they don't have the want. Right.
Yeah.
But so with teammates in the Read Nebraska grant, we provide we have 8 different categories of books that kids can choose from. All the mentees get the choice. Again, the gift of choice. It empowers you. Yeah. And then we make sure that the books that are included in those packs, like, they're different. They give you career options. They show you what you can do in each one of these subject matters. Like, they help you become the expert. And so the kids get to take those home. And so you talk about how can we track some of the things. We have pre-surveys that come out to say, like, hey, how many books did you have at home before this? Mm-hmm. And then post to see how, are we igniting that joy, right?
Yeah.
Are we getting some traction there? Are the kids feeling more confident? We don't have access to their grades, mm-hmm. but it's important just to see just the small things go a long way. Right. And then at each school, we provide a book bundle that has 28 different books and activities and STEM games and art cards. And so it's not tricking them into reading, but it's just, hey, even the instructions.
Mm-hmm. Alluring them mm-hmm. into reading. And this is in one package
mm-hmm.
per kid.
Per kid.
28.
Sorry. Per school.
Per school.
So we were 214 schools last year. So per school, they had the book bundle.
Okay.
Which is 28 items.
Wow.
Each child within those schools that is in the teammates program got the gift of choice. And then we're doing it 3 different times this year.
Wow.
So
that's great.
That's really amazing.
Because as, you know, we can contest to growing up, the books that we had, we didn't have the bundles that came to the house or to the school.
Mm-hmm.
We had a salesman that come to the door selling the encyclopedia,
mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
the World Encyclopedia. And I'm sure your parents probably bought those also.
Actually, my mother sold World Book and Britannica.
Yeah, Britannica.
While she was in graduate school.
And that's how we engaged in, there's a bigger world out there, right? So that's an amazing program.
Thank you. And then also, Scholastic Book Fairs, right?
Yes.
You look forward to it if you could afford a book.
Yeah. Right.
So what we've done since inception are CLC book fairs with the Title I schools. The kids can come in right before the holiday season, so they have something to look forward to when they get home, and they can pick out 2 to 3 different books and or puzzles to do for free.
That's way cool.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh.
That is awesome.
So what can the community do, or what can listeners do to help not only link to literacy, but maybe kids in their area, or any ideas?
Well, for one, I implore you to have an awakening. Open your eyes. There is more than just what's at your front door, truly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? And then listen. And once your eyes are awake, don't close them, right? Yeah, and so how you could support us specifically are, if you want to volunteer. Time is, it's a different form of currency, and it matters, right? Obviously, any kind of currency you want to give helps, right? For sustainability purposes, we need $180,000 to keep Lancaster County open for Dolly Parton Imagination Library, because we don't want to open it up and say, oh, wait, you get a free book for a month, and just kidding,
Shut it down. Yeah.
So that's important. And then what we're really trying to do is be strategic, and so the grants we apply for, do it for the programs. And then I love literacy, how can I give, there's long-term planning and estate planning and all those things, to be proactive. And so, again, when you're not here, the legacy of literacy still goes
on. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's really smart. I think we've got about 5 minutes left. Lorraine or Terrell, do you have any questions? Have anything come up?
Can you kind of share with the general public, for those who are not in Nebraska,
mm-hmm.
how this grant scenario works and how they may be able to do what you all are doing?
Well, I don't have the granular specifics because we didn't apply for it ourselves. It was under teammates. But the Read Nebraska grant specifically targets the age group, the grade levels that are underperforming. And it doesn't matter your race. It doesn't matter the socioeconomic status. Because it's across the board.
Sure.
And so if you see that need and your state has someone in legislature that actually cares.
Right.
And wants to put their name on it. That's that's how it got across the finish line. That was an initiative of Pillen. And
That's nice. Mm-hmm. Very nice.
Yeah.
Before we go to break, can you give the general public some media information, and we'll do it again, about how to contact you all?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
We'll post it on our website too. So if
www.linkedtoliteracy.org.
Number two, not spelled out
yes.
two. So before we break, I do want to rattle off some literacy statistics. By age 3, children in low-income families hear roughly 30 million fewer words than children from higher-income communities, contributing to vocabulary and literacy gaps. Only about 1 in 300 children in low-income areas own books at home. Link to literacy is changing that. Access to books. Schools in lower income communities have fewer books, outdated resources, etc. Parental education levels. Children whose parents have a college degree are significantly more likely to read at or above grade level compared to children whose parents have not completed high school. School funding. Schools in wealthier districts have higher. We know that. Rural and inner city poverty rates are higher, tend to have lower literacy rates. There's a digital divide. I think we can kind of put two and two together on that. Yeah. nutrition and health, malnutrition and health issues linked to poverty can impact cognitive development and attention spans, which are crucial for learning to read. There was an article on CNN that talked about fluoride in water has contributed to a 5% decrease in IQ status. And so I think that that article on CNN said that if those children did not have fluoride in the water, that there would be about 30% less children in that category,
right,
which I think is pretty significant. When we're talking about, rather than take fluoride out of water and get our children healthy, we're talking about cutting their health care. Lastly, before we go on break, programs like Head Start and Reach Out and Read have shown positive outcomes in improving literacy readiness for children and disadvantaged. So there's data out there that shows that programs like Head Start, Reach Out and Read, programs like yours actually do help. And with that, Lorraine, you want to take us out of our first...
Okay, thank you. On that strong note, we will take a break. We'll be back. Make sure you visit us at www.hiddenbattlesdmi.com. Make sure you like us, subscribe, and share this with someone who can benefit from it.
The Mental Health Advocacy Coalition is a dedicated group committed to transforming the landscape of mental health services and support for individuals living with mental illness. Our mission is to promote awareness, foster understanding, and drive legislative change that ensures better access to care, improved resources, and enhanced quality of life for those affected by mental health conditions.
That concludes Hidden Battles Destigmatizing Mental Illness podcast. Join in every week. Be sure to subscribe, like, and share. Join in next week when the advocates talk about how to create a family mission, vision, and values.
Welcome to Hidden Battles, Destigmatizing Mental Illness, a weekly podcast where passionate advocates of mental health converge to illuminate unseen struggles faced by millions. Join Jeremy, Terrell, and Lorraine as they delve into candid conversations about stigmas, cultural risk, values, intersectionality, and mental health. Hear from mental health professionals and those diagnosed with a mental illness. Together, they put on the table the things people think about but are afraid to talk about. Get ready to embark on an insightful journey.
Listen weekly on Spotify, YouTube, Apple Podcast, and subscribe, like, and please share with family and friends that can benefit. See you on the journey.